a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Yay. Rob, you look so happy.
Live.
I always like to start the lives talking to Rob because he gets so excited whenever we get live, and I just feel like he's got so much energy to get started. It makes me happy to talk to him.
Well, Nate, it's you. That's what it is. It's all you, buddy. Right from
it's
the
me?
Word go. Yes.
Aw, what a sweetie you are. What a sweetie. Yeah, when you're like, who the heck is this kid, right? Well, what's going on, everyone? As you can see, we have up in the I'm going to go Brady Bunch style. You ready for this? Let me get limbered up. All right, straight above, we got Mike Pinoza. What's up, Mike?
How you doing?
Doing well. Over here, we got Demetrius. My fingers are wrong way. Yeah, it's super confusing, right?
How you doing, Nate?
Straight to the left, Mike Howerton. And bringing up the bottom, we got Rob Hovick. What's up, Rob?
Good day, everybody.
I'm really good at pointing. I'm going to get good at this someday. I don't know when, but I'm going to get good at this someday. So I think, Mike, you've been on the podcast before talking to me. I think we did two episodes together, if I'm not mistaken. I think I brought you on twice, I think. But for anybody... For anybody who hasn't heard of you or knows your work in the industry, why don't you give a quick plug for yourself?
Oh, I don't know about plugging myself, but I've been the editor of Billiards Digest for 41 years. So I've seen a little bit of pool in my day and enjoy it as much today as I've enjoyed it 41 years ago.
Gotcha. All right. So we're going to be talking lots of pool today. We're going to be talking about the big time.
So that means you started doing that when you were 10.
It's the only job I've had out of college. So I came here right from college as a journalism major and got a job with this magazine and fell in love with the billiard business and pool players and just never left.
So wait, were you a pool player before you got the job?
Not at all. Not at all. Still, wow. Still not a pool player, really. No, I was just a journalism major looking for a job and found this magazine company who was looking for an editor and lied my way through the interview, mispronounced Willie Hoppy's name, and somehow or another still got my – I think I just said Willie Hopp. Somehow or another still got the job, so been here since.
Not bad. So now are you going to take those – base of skills that you have at lying and lie your way through this podcast?
Probably. I'm sure I'll mispronounce someone's name. There were too many Polish players in the world championship for me.
Oh, man.
Maybe he could be Mike Pinoza, president 24. Anyway.
All right. So, yeah, there are, man, isn't it crazy how strong Poland is? Just, I mean, looking at that, the Polish players are sick. It's gross how good those guys play.
Yeah, they're really, top to bottom. They're probably the best group in Europe. You know, if you get to, you go through like the Euro Tour rankings and just, you know, add up points based on ranking, the top five players in Poland would have the highest combined ranking. Thing is, they just don't have that number one guy. They don't have that tournament. Yeah. They're always in that, 4 to 12 range. A couple of them, and it didn't surprise me at all that all nine of them made the final 64. But then it didn't surprise me again when half of them were out when it went to 32. So just a lot of talent there. They just need to get out there on the international stage a little bit more and compete a little bit harder. And once they start winning trophies, it's going to be hard to stop those guys.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the top three, I think it's always going to have to go to Austria, I think. But the top five on, I think, goes to Poland. Up from like 5 to 200, I think it's got to go to Poland. So, all right, well, let's jump into this. And Mike and Demetrius, you guys were not on the podcast last week. So why don't you guys give your thoughts on the World Pool Championship? And we can start with Demetrius. We'll start with you. Give us your overall thoughts on the event and any storylines you want to highlight along the way.
Just a couple. Thanks, Nate. You know, I think that, first of all, I mean, congratulations to Elbin. You know, winning the world championship, you know, it's one of those things that looks almost impossible. You see all those names, and how does anybody get to the finals and win it? And he's done it twice now, and at a fairly young age. And what a tremendous player. One of the things I like about Elbin is that there's no one part of his game that's so noticeable where he doesn't shoot. You know, I mean, how do you shoot straighter than Shaw or Filler? And you know, but it's just he strikes clean. His patterns are clean. He game manages extremely well. His safeties are very good. He breaks well. He's just very proficient in every part of the game with a good mental game, and he puts it together. It just looks like the way Poole should be played, and he deserves it. And so, I mean, here's a title so hard to win. Shane's never won it, and he's done it twice now. And just, you know, really, really remarkable. With all the great champions, it's easy to overlook him in favor of people that are flashy or very, very domineering. But what a great player. So congratulations to Elbin is my first point. The second point is Omar El-Shaheen to get to the finals. I knew it. I played him at Derby. I guess it's been a little over a year now ago. And I remember I'd never seen him play up close before. And sitting there and watching him even just warm up, I remember thinking this guy is just an elite striker. And I think he's proved that. And he's, you know, he's done some tremendous things on the table. And now I think he's got everyone's attention. So what I want to do real quick with Omar is plug. There's a cool match coming up August 3rd to 5th. August 3rd to August 5th. He is going to be playing a race to 100 against Oscar Dominguez, which right now it's hard to think that Oscar is going to be competitive, except that Oscar is going to be playing. They're going to be playing at hard times on Oscar's home tables with somewhat tight pockets and gritty cloth. So it's going to favor a little bit more moving, a little bit more, you know, maneuvering maybe. And Oscar's a very good grappler, and he plays very good on those tables. He's beaten a lot of great players on those tables. So that's going to be coming up between August 3rd to August 5th, Oscar Dominguez versus Omar El-Shaheen on Aaron's Pool Parlor. So if you haven't already followed Aaron Taylor, Aaron's Pool Parlor, look that up on Facebook. And follow it now so that you can watch that stream. And then the only other thing that I think is interesting there's a lot of interesting things. The only other thing I think is pertinent is I think when it gets to Shane, but I'll save those comments to when we start talking a little bit more about where Shane's at with the other events that he's played and are coming up.
Yep. And Mike, what you got? Oh, we can't hear you anymore. We lost your audio. First rodeo?
No, I was on my... Can you hear me now?
Yeah, you good.
Okay. I'm not... It's kind of gone... The audio and the hearing is gone off a couple times. I'm not sure why. But I just thought, you know, kudos to Matchroom for putting together, I think, one of their best tournaments. I thought it looked great. I thought it ran great. You know, given the circumstances... I thought they did a great job. You know, I will always, you know, have my thought will always be that this was not the world championship field that we should have had, but that's not really their fault. There are a lot of people in the field who just shouldn't be in a world championship. Takes nothing away with what Elbin did in winning. It's a really difficult tournament to win, especially when it goes to single elimination all the way from 64 on in. You just can't make a mistake. And Elbin is most dangerous when he loses early in a double elimination situation or a multi, you know, loss format. He did the same thing at the Championship League pool event. You know, he does that, and he did it here where he lost early to Roberto and then just buckled down, and then he just doesn't give in. He's such a great player. And what Demetrius said was spot on. He just doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He doesn't take chances when other players will. He just knows how to stay in the game. Great tournament for him. Obviously great tournament for Omar, and anybody who's ever met Omar couldn't be happier that he did that well. Always cool to see someone like Oliver pop in, you know, as a complete unknown and make the Final Four. So It was a really fun tournament to watch. I thought they did a really great job with it. And yeah, for Elbin, you know, he's won world championship twice and he was in the finals a third time. So, you know, that's a pretty good career. As far as Shane goes,
Shane has not won a world championship. I don't think that defines his career one way or another, because at the end of the day, the world championship is a great title and it's a great name. You know, it's as far as difficulty of winning, it's really not much different than the historical value of the U.S. Open wins. And Shane's got five of those. So, yeah, those are my thoughts on the world championship.
Yeah, and I guess we're kind of getting to the point now where they're making some announcements about the Moscone Cup. And how much trouble are we in as the U.S.? How much trouble do you guys think that we're in when players like Oliver are coming out, people you've never even heard of before?
Well,
and you have stuff like that come out, and then you hear people from like Mika Immonen told, you know, he came onto my podcast. That episode will drop pretty soon too. But he's like, yeah, that guy's, you know, flip a coin and there's, you know, 50,000 other people just like that kid right there in Europe that are coming up that you've never heard of. And it's like, whoa.
Mike. Well, it's been that way for a while in Europe, and it'll be that way continuing. The thing is, Moscone Cup, they may be 60 players deep, 70 players deep, but unless it's a 60-player tournament, it still only matters if you've got five guys who can match up with their top five guys. And, you know, we'll be the underdog for years and years to come, but it's still going to be five guys racing to five. So it's not, you know, it's not insurmountable. We showed that 2 years in a row when we were a heavy underdog 2 years in a row. So it's just how are you playing when the ball drops and you get a couple of rolls, you get a little bit of momentum. And, you know, our top five guys can play race to five with anybody in the world. You know, they might not be favored in a lot of them, but can they win sets? Mm-hmm. Of course. So the Moscone Cup, you know, we're going to be underdogs for a long time, but it's not insurmountable because it's still only five guys.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Well, does anybody else have any thoughts on the World Pool Championships before we move on to, I guess, the big time classic? No? All right. Well, then let's start talking about the big time classic. We'll talk about the one pocket first. And a little bit of a surprise, I guess. Carlo Beato double dips Josh Roberts in the finals. I mean, I knew Carlo dabbled a little bit with one pocket, but I certainly didn't think he was going to be a favorite in this field. Looking across the field, some of the top players, I mean, Alex Pagulayan played in this. Of course, Josh Roberts was in there. Who else? We got Dennis Arcoyo, Alex Calderon, Warren Kiamko. Yeah, I mean, those are some of the top names in this. I mean, this is a real, real one pocket field. And I mean, the thing that I noticed first, and I'm just going to throw my opinion out there and we'll discuss this because I don't know. I'm the person talking. This is how many tournaments in a row that Alex has not even really made the final. He hasn't even made the money in this. Right. Let's see. Where did he finish up actually? Okay. So fifth, sixth cashes in this tournament. Yeah. So then he was one into the money on it. I mean, what's going on with Alex? I mean, he's pretty much, he decided the best one pocket, you know, player in the world and has been for what, 10, 15 years, something like that. It's been a while. And he's not even, he can't win any of these smaller tournaments or really make deep runs in it. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
Okay, I'll jump in. I think that Alex, he's always been one of my favorite players. I think he was at the top of pool for 10, 15 years, and he still is a phenomenal player. But when you come to winning against the best players in the world in any discipline, I think you can't be wounded in any way. You have to be firing on all cylinders in terms of striking, in terms of confidence, and just in terms of, you know, internal. I mean, he's never struggled about belief, but it's clear that, you know, we're talking about Poland. We're talking about what the players of today are doing. It's clear that for the last few years, you know, his rotation game is just a hair off of where it was at his peak. And at a time when everybody else is actually getting better. So we've seen it when he played, you know, that match against Kachi. We've seen how he stacks up against, you know, just whatever it is. And I think that knowing that he's been eclipsed a little bit on the striking and just a little bit he's just not top tier anymore. And so when you're not, well, I shouldn't say that. He's not at the top of the world anymore. And so for all those years that everyone's like, oh, he's the best one pocket player in the world. And I'm still not going to argue with that. But that was while his confidence was like, I'm the best pool player in the world. You know, Shane was the best and I'll follow him around and gamble with him anytime and show me a player. I'm not saying I'm the best, but show me a player that could beat me and I'll play them and whatever. And it's like, and I just feel like once that's gone, that magical I'm the best is gone. And he's just been a hair off of his superhuman level. I just feel like he's a little bit wounded, and he could still play great, and he could still win. And maybe in a long money match where he knows that he's got time to get in stroke and outmaneuver these guys, maybe he could get there with anybody. But it's in a short set against top players. He's a little vulnerable, and I think I think when you're a little bit wounded, you can't limp around it. The feels have gotten too strong and those types of things get exposed in strange situations, you know, just those make or break going for the spot shot off the end rail and those little situations where you get tested. He just doesn't pass the test all the time. And he used to pass that test all the time. And now he's passing it a lot of the time, but he's just a little bit more vulnerable, I think, than he used to be.
And, Mike Cowerton, I know you're not the biggest fan of one pocket, so we'll hold off on you probably until.
Please do.
Rob, you have any thoughts on it?
I'm going to treat this like an AA meeting and just pass this time.
Okay, no problem. Well, I guess talking about the overall event then, Carlo Beato beats Josh Roberts in the finals. That's a great tournament for Josh. I mean, this is a strong field. Josh has always been one of my, I think Josh Roberts is one of the most underrated players in the entire country. Him and Oscar Dominguez, I think, kind of take that role for me. The dude is really, really strong. And I think it's because we don't really see him playing in these big national events like the World Pool Championships or, you know, other events overseas, the big ones that I think he kind of just kind of floats under the radar. But the guy's a great player and he's a great one pocket player, too. So it doesn't necessarily surprise me that he's up at the top. And I mean, I guess Carlo Beato, he's just such a talent, right? That, and he can get there playing anything. I mean, he could probably jump into a snooker event and, you know, have success potentially with how good of a cuist he is. So I guess, does anybody have any thoughts on the finals there or either of these players doing well in it? Mike, anything?
I think, Josh Roberts, he's been, you know, the talk of a lot of people in the last couple of years, even when they talk about, you know, players that could eventually work into a Moscone Cup role, but he does, you know, need to be in more of the big events more often to see how he does in those against the top players in a continual basis. And, he needs to show that a little bit more. He certainly has the talent. You know, you see it in a lot of these smaller tournaments, regional tournaments, gambling matches. But, you know, I'd like to see him, you know, try his hand on the bigger stage a little more often just to see what he can do. I don't blame him if he chooses not to do that, you know, and chooses to stick with where he's got a better chance at making money, because for a lot of these guys, it's a living. He's a terrific player.
And we were pretty close to actually getting to see a Josh Roberts versus Demetrius matchup. That would have been fun.
Yeah. I was down in Atlanta here about 6 weeks ago or a month ago, and I was supposed to play him, but his plans changed at the last minute. He had to cancel on me, so I couldn't make my contribution to the through his travel fund.
All right. Well, let's move on from the one pocket then. That's pretty much all the thoughts I have on this one. And let's go to the ladies nine ball real quick. We'll cover this one up. This was won by Nicole Keeney. So good tournament for her. Ming Nung gets second place. And let's go over to the B side. We have Tam Trinh. Hopefully I pronounced that right. And we have in fourth place, we have Courtney Peters. So I wanted to – oh, and Kim Pierce got 5th, 6th. I do know who that is. She's a – actually, I'm not sure on a lot of these women's here. But I wanted to make sure that we highlighted them. Anybody have anything to say about that? Not trying to just skip over it, but I honestly am not sure of a lot of these women's. Yeah, I don't know.
Has Nicole been playing? I haven't seen her name in quite some time.
I haven't either, yeah. I'm not totally sure.
I know she was, well, and Mike's aware of this. I mean, she was one of the young players on the WPBA, what, 7-8 years ago, and she seemed like she was going to have quite a career, and then she just kind of disappeared.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You're right. It was a name that popped up a lot some years ago, aspiring WPBA. And I think, you know, a number of those players kind of had decisions to make on how much they were going to play pool after the WPBA kind of, started only being able to have a tournament or two a year, and there wasn't anything sustainable there. So it could have just been one of those situations where, you know, people have to make a decision between how much they're really going to play pool again and not. So that's all I can think of at that point.
Yeah, maybe we'll find out with this, because the WPBA's got an event coming up. So I guess maybe if she plays in that, then we'll have an idea that she might be back.
Yeah.
But that one's coming up in Iowa, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
All right, well, let's move on to the Classic Open 9-ball, the big-time Classic Open 9-ball. And we are going to be, well, doesn't it seem kind of fitting that Dennis Arcoyo double-dipped Shane in the finals with what we're going to be talking about afterwards and how the first match went? You know, running from behind and coming through and double-dipping. I mean, it's kind of it's almost like destiny the way the first match ended up with Shane and Dennis the first time. Shane's up. I want to say, was it 114 or 112 to about 97, 98? And Dennis comes back and wins at 120 to 119. Seems only fitting that the double dip would happen here. But
Seems fitting that they would play each other in the final. And now, you know, it sets up well for their head-to-head match. So, you know, just builds up a little more animosity, a little more grit and determination, so it can't do anything but help the one-on-one match.
Absolutely, yeah. Had some good marketing there. So Jesus Intencio gets third place. I mean, what a great tournament for him. This dude's everything he basically plays in now. He's doing really well, and I mean, he's coming up as like the next American kind of superstar. Him and Sky, of course. I mean, he's not really American, but Am I wrong in saying I think he might be an American citizen now? Does anybody know?
Don't know.
No, I'll have to reach out to somebody and ask him on that. Let's see. So Alex Pagulayan finishes fourth. Warren Kiamko and Cesar Archiga gets fifth, sixth. Carlo Beato, Alex Calderon finish up 7th, 8th. I mean, there's a lot of great, great players in this final event. Sky Woodward gets 17th through 24th. I mean, that'll tell you how tough this tournament is. Josh Roberts, Justin Espinoza, Alex Calderon. Keith Price is a great player. There's a lot of really, really top players in this. It's good to see that I guess we're having real events again, right? I mean, people are playing again, and the U.S. has kind of opened up, so... Rob, why don't you give us your thoughts on the event? Anything that you thought was a standout or a surprise or anything?
I have a question, you know, not to change the subject because we're talking pool here. For you guys, you mentioned the Moscone Cup and in the future. And I'd like to know what the other four guys here on the show think about. Who's going to be the fourth and fifth players for the United States? We're pretty much going to go with Shane, Billy, and Sky as three starters. But then four and five, that's kind of open. And I'm just interested in what you guys here think number four and five, who they'll be.
Well, anybody want to go on first? Mike, what do you think? Mike Howerton, sorry.
My only thoughts are I'd really like to see Justin Birdman in one of those spots, but
he will not be in one of those spots.
And that's disappointing.
And why is that? Politics?
No. We'll have to talk off air. It's
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know that he won't be, but I'm pretty sure he won't be. And we can talk off air on that one because I don't exactly know, but I think I know. But yeah, I would like to see Justin as well. I would love to see Oscar, Justin, and Tyler pick two of the three, personally. But go on, Mike.
That's my biggest. I mean, I don't know who the fourth or fifth are, and I'm not really sure. I mean, I think if you take Sky, Billy, and Shane out of the equation, then Bergman may be the top player, and I think we had success when he was playing. For the fifth, boy, I have no idea.
Yeah. Mike Pinozzo, any thoughts?
I don't know what the inside is on Justin Bergman definitely not being a contender, because he would have been my fourth pick, you know, guaranteed. But if he's out of the equation, yeah, I'm not 100% sure where I'd go. I think that, Tyler is an obvious pick for everyone since he didn't make it last year. But Tyler hasn't really done a lot to dazzle me in the last year and a half, including the Moscone Cup that we won in 19. So, it's a tough call at that point. It's going to be a gut feeling on Jeremy's part, although to me the really interesting addition to this equation is adding Shane as the vice captain, which is kind of another way of saying Shane's going to have serious impact on who plays with him in London. So I think that he'll have a big influence on Jeremy's decision as to who to pick. And I think that was part of the, I'm not going to say it's part of the deal of him being co-captain or vice captain, but that's what I read into it.
That's what I read into it too. I think I said that on the podcast last week that I thought Shane was there because he wanted more of a role on who was going to be on the team. But and I reached out to Joey Gray and asked him, and he doesn't really know the situation, what happened either. So I'm not totally sure what happened. A couple of people throwing out Mike Duchesne. Mike Duchesne's been back playing again, actually. I know he's still working full time, I don't think that he's got much of a chance of making the team either. And that one is definitely politics.
Yeah,
I think if
Shane's the vice captain, I've got a better chance of being on the team than Mike Duchesne. So, yeah.
Well, I think we've got to just start going. I liked what Matchroom's been doing with the younger players, and last year Chris Robinson. I was a big fan of Tyler at the time, but I think Chris is a reasonable candidate. I also think Danny Olsen should be somewhat talked about. Danny's been playing well, and if he's given an opportunity, we don't know how well he can get playing. So I think in addition to Tyler, I'd be more inclined to start thinking along the lines of Chris and Danny and Tyler, because they're still on the upswing, and I think and they're hungry and they're active. And I think that being on the upswing, hungry and active means a lot. I also want to mention, one thing I've been really following. And so as we look forward 5 years of the Moscone Cup, we have a lot of young talent coming up through these junior tournaments. I've been following these very closely because I coach a few of them. And I'll tell you right now, there are a number of young players between, 13 and 16 that are playing very, very good pool right now. And so, I think that bodes well. I don't think I think we've got a chance of raising the bar in the U.S. Here over the next 5-10 years.
I don't disagree with that. So, Rob, you haven't given us your thoughts. You asked the question.
You guys mentioned the possibilities of these other players. Sure. And I agree with all that. But I was totally impressed at the championships this last week with Jeremy Sosie's play.
That's what Laura said too.
He was just so steady, and he was so confident, and his position play was just right spot on, and he's center pocketing these balls and not cheating the pockets. I like him because he performed so well in this last big stage format, you could say, and was surprising. He's been around for a while.
Here's my question.
Made it to the elite group, but boy, I was impressed with him. I wouldn't mind seeing him on the team.
For the two mics, has Jeremy ever been on the Moscone Cup? I don't remember him ever playing for the Moscone Cup.
No. He was a finalist a couple of the years with when Mark Wilson was first the captain, and he had kind of a bigger group that he was training, and then at the last second picking the final five. And I remember he and Brandon Schuff were the last two out one of the years. But he's been up for consideration a couple times, probably not in the last 3 or 4 years. But yeah, I would agree with Robert. He was really solid at the World Championships and didn't look intimidated, didn't look flustered, didn't, you know, he just was all business. And I was really impressed as well.
Yep.
Good kid too. And
yeah. Did he make, he made 17th through, is that right? 17th through 31st or second? Is that what he made? He didn't make the quarters, right?
No. I believe
it's one before the quarterfinals.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good showing for him. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I think I had heard of him before, of course. I'd never really seen him play much. I do remember watching him play, I mean, he was one of the slowest players I think I've ever seen in my life. So I'm actually kind of surprised that he handled the shot clock so well. But, yeah, I mean, it's if that's kind of his game and he can handle that pressure of being in that matchroom arena, why not? He seems to be a player that could certainly he seems like a good calming influence, if nothing else. Right. I mean, it's always nice to have a calming person, I guess, on the team to settle everything down when you need it. We got Billy for the hype man whenever you need to get jacked up and get ready to go. Might be a good role for him. Who knows? What do you think? What do you think, Rob?
Yeah, I'd also would like to see Tyler play again. Steyer, I'm a little partial. I got some prejudice there, him being from Wisconsin and just across the block here, you know, and doing all he's doing, like Demetrius is, for the growth of the game by coaching and starting pool training centers and things like that, and doing some things, him and Margaret. Very involved in younger players and the future of pool for America. I would like to see him, but there are Justin certainly is the next choice for number four.
I think Justin is the second or the third best player in the country. I think
Robin, so in there definitely.
Yeah, either him or Mike DeShane. I think Mike DeShane's still up there too. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that was a pretty good discussion on that one. I guess back to the Big Time Classic. Is there anything that we really want to discuss on this one? Does anybody have anything that they wanted to discuss about this tournament?
I see in the comments here, Ben Brady just mentioned Corey Duell.
Yeah. Nope.
And what about Carol Hardy mentioned? What about John Schmidt, Mr. 600? So.
If they were playing straight pool races to five, I think he'd be an obvious choice. I just don't think he's been active on the rotation scene, and his nine ball game has not been, you know, he hasn't been active. He just hasn't been active.
I'm sorry. I just started laughing at New Jersey pool players. Or Troy's comment, put Sean, our team, or get ship his ass back to Scotland. That's a great, yeah,
pretty funny.
He's got U.S. His pool room is even named U.S. pool. Like, what is that? Come on, Jason. You're basically American at this point. That's a great line.
Ship his ass back to Scotland.
All right. Well, whew. All right. Let's get back on topic. Well, let's just look into the big matchup that's coming up this weekend. Shane versus Dennis. I'm going to try to give as close to accurate as I can 5 months ago description of what happened in the first match. I think it was kind of back and forth a little bit with always Shane having a little bit of a lead. Shane extends it out on the last day, gets up to, I want to say it was as high as 112 to about 96 or 97. And then Dennis ends up winning, I guess, almost 25 of the next 20 games and gets the match back to 117 to 117 and then scratches. And then I'm pretty sure that maybe it was 118 to 118 and then scratches. Shane runs the rack out and then breaks and scratches. And then Dennis runs out the last two racks. Does that sound pretty close to accurate?
Yep.
Anybody? Okay. So So that the match finishes up in a race to 120. It was deemed as the best pool match in history, and this is the rematch of it. Dennis Arcoyo wins 120 to 119. I personally have never seen any race that long go hill, and now we're running it back. We'll start with Mike Howerton. What do you think as far as the run back? What do you think is going to happen?
You know, it doesn't feel like this match has been getting the kind of PR that you would expect it to get. You know, it's kind of crept up on us. I mean, it's easy to say that Shane wins this one, but I still think Dennis is going to be a small favorite. Maybe, you know, I don't know that I'd give 10 racks, but, you know, I think Dennis is going to be a small favorite. And I'd like to come back after everybody gives their opinions and talk a little bit more about Dennis.
You got it. All right, Mike Pinozzo, what do you got?
Well, sequels just never seem to be as good as the original. And so, you know, I don't see anybody running away with this, but I don't think it's going to have the drama that the first one did. It almost can't possibly have the drama that the first one did.
I'd be hard pressed to find a storyline that's better than the first.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think that means it's going to be disappointing, and I don't know which side I would pick to win. I just don't think it's going to have the same edge of their seat, everybody watching, as the first one did. But you know, it's still going to be a great match. I mean, I would favor Shane in it, but you know, Shane gets ahead and gets a lead. You can't tell me that Dennis wouldn't be in the back of his head, as far as, you know, I don't care what your lead is, I can make it up. So, you know, it'll be interesting. It'll be fun to watch. But like I said, sequels very rarely measure up.
Rob, what you got?
I think it's going to be pretty darn exciting. maybe beating the first matchup. Possibly Dennis is ahead by 15 games going into the last five. And Mr. Van Boney comes back from nowhere. I it's got potential. I don't see the hype like Mike says, but it's going to be good. There's no question about it. These are two premier pool players, butting heads for the second time, plus other events, tournament events that things have happened between these two. So I'm looking forward to it for sure.
On every great show, you got to have a hype man. That's clearly Rob. And you got to have a reality man. And that's clearly Mike. You know, this event's going to suck. This event's going to be great. This event's going to suck. This event's going to be great.
Mike and reality are very, very rarely words used in the same sentence.
Demi, what you got?
Yeah, this one is, I think it's going to be a very, very hard to call match. I've been stewing on it, and I think that it pains me to say this, but I think I might have to give a slight edge to Dennis. I think what we've got going for us is last time around, I kind of felt like, well, if they play 10 ball, Shane's gear and his break are just completely dominant. And so going in, we were really curious, like, how is Shane going to have a breaking advantage playing 9 ball with a 3-point rule, 9 on the spot? And I think the way he was able to accumulate the lead he did was that he was out breaking Dennis in the first half of that match. Dennis got that break working and was able to hang with him. And, of course, he needed Shane to let him back into the match, but then he took advantage. This time around, I'm trying to figure out where the advantage is for Shane. Dennis, I think, has that break going just as well as Shane does. And when it comes to kind of what I was saying about Alex, I've really been thinking about this. Shane has been really trying to rally his career. And again, in a similar way to Alex, he's been playing phenomenal, you know, getting to the finals of this last tournament, you know, winning national level events like Turning Stone. And he's always plays good. But there's little things that I see in Shane's game where it's like he keeps trying to rally, but he's not quite where it was. So, for example, when he was playing this World Championship, you know, I didn't watch the whole thing, but I watched that match he lost to Oliver. And there's just little things like he'll come with a hard shot and he'll get down on the ball and get off the ball and chalk and kind of get ready to fight. he'll make the shot, and then he'll end up, he ended up on the end rail where he's a little awkward leg at this ball on the side. And it's like he's irritated that he ended up like, hey, man, I made that good shot. I should have something better than this. And he didn't, you know, he got down, and you could tell he should have gotten off that ball too, but he just wasn't ready to grind in that second ball in a row. And he kind of missed it and was kind of disgusted at what the way the balls were working. Meanwhile, these young guys are just like, let me add a piece of the ball and I'll shoot it in. And I see this kind of leaking out into Shane's game. Now, Shane's career is really interesting because he used to play like in 07, 08. He was more game management controlling. And then he started playing so good. He kind of caught a gear and was just like making a few more unforced errors, but he was catching gears nobody could hang with. The problem right now is he can't catch those gears in nine ball because of the nature of the randomness of that nine on the spot break. And so he can't ever really get that big gear going where he's putting these huge packages together any more than Dennis can. And so he can no longer afford to leak off these opportunities. And so in the end, I feel like Dennis has neutralized the break. And I feel like Shane hasn't quite neutralized some of those in-between moving and kind of clutch situations. Shane can definitely win. It's hard to bet against a guy that got a big lead last time. But I think at this point, I think it's a pretty even match. And I think Dennis is more connected.
So this is how you can tell that Demetrius and I have not talked for a long time, right here, because I think you are so wrong, Demetrius. When we went into this first match, we were on the same exact page. We were like, I'm pretty sure Shane's gonna win. Nine on the spot. It's a little goofy. Who really knows? All right, we're gonna go with Shane. Let's lose some money, right? We both kind of just settled on Shane, and that's kind of where we are at. I am so deep into the Shane bandwagon here, it's not even funny. When they played the first time, Shane was off the lake hitting balls for 2 weeks. I mean, he had literally just came off of the lake and just said, hey, oh yeah, that's right, I got this matchup. Let me go hit a couple balls this week and let's see what happens. He is now coming off of the Whirlpool Masters, the Whirlpool Championships. In the Whirlpool Championships, there was not a player in that field. And Albin said it himself when on our interview yesterday. There was not a player in that field that could have beaten Shane. The only person that could have beaten that Shane is the tournament organizers by changing the racking pattern. If you kept that template rack, nobody in the world was going to beat Shane. He's breaking the ball so good. He's controlling his one ball so well. Yes, that's one on the spot. That's different. This is nine on the spot. A little bit different. But Shane is so in tune with his break at this point. There was not he made Jason Shaw look like he didn't even belong in the same country. And Jason is such a great player, and Shane was just running through everybody in that tournament. Shane is coming in his top gear, his top gear, and it's going to take something weird to even have him not win the world championships, and that was, you know, changing the racks. I think Shane isn't going to run through Dennis by any stretch of the imagination. Dennis is still a great player, but I feel exponentially more confident in this one than I did the last one. Shane's hungry.
Let me ask you a question about that. By the way, you mentioned that the only thing that could beat Shane is a rack change. I mean, I would also include Shane himself. I mean, he let himself get beat last time. And if you watch that match, they lost to Oliver. Yeah, the rack made a role in that, but he had chances to win. For sure he had chances to win, and he just wasn't ready to do it. So, you know, that's the question. So my question to you then is, you're talking that he's probably going to have a breaking advantage. Do you feel that Shane needs a breaking advantage against Dennis in that format to win? Or do you feel that if Dennis could break as well as him, who do you think wins?
I think it's a fair question. And what I would say is I don't think Shane was at his peak game when they played the first time. You can't tell me that. I don't care if you've been playing the game for 30 years as the best in the world. You need more than 2 weeks on a lake to compete against who many would argue is the straightest shooter this game has ever seen, right? You need more than 2 weeks off of a lake hitting balls around in your basement on live Facebook video to get yourself properly prepared to play against one of the world's best players ever. Shane has been playing nonstop now, basically since the end of April. And if he's not in his peak, he never will be. I mean, as far as what his game can do right now, I think his game is there, and it has been there. And I think it was shown pretty clearly in the Whirlpool Championships, where he was just mowing through everybody. I mean, like you said, another person that could beat Shane is himself. You're right. Well, Shane, you know, that switch on the rack that messed with him. I think it really messed with him.
I think that he's really, you're right, like he's mowing people down. And I think that when he's able to get his gear going and make it like who can run the fastest, I think he's a great high gear player that can run people down. But what I would say is that he's, and I would agree, he's at the top of his game physically when it comes to catching big gears. And he can, at any point, he can run a package that's so big, that's so well played, that you're like, nobody can play that good. But if the format is such that it's hard to control the break with the nine of the spot, and Dennis is fighting back and landing packages back at him when he's playing hard, if it comes to a, like a, who has the more grit to, you know, to regroup and make smaller unforced errors, I just feel like if it's a high gear contest, nobody can ever keep up with Shane. But while he's playing the best pool of his life physically, I'm not completely convinced he's playing the best pool of his life in terms of the grit it needs to fight for those in between racks that you need to get going, to give yourself a chance to get that momentum. And here's the thing. I hope I'm wrong. I'm always rooting for Shane to make the comeback and launch the second. You know, I'd love to see him have another 5-10 years of complete dominance. I've been rooting for it. I just haven't seen it yet.
Yep. I think the first time when they played, Dennis was at the best form of his, maybe of his life. I mean, the way that Dennis was playing when they went into that first matchup, he can't rise above that. I mean, that's the best I think that Dennis can play, given his breaking disadvantage or his breaking problems. I don't think Dennis can shoot the ball straighter than he was then. I don't see him at that spot right now, and I do see Shane significantly higher than where he was going into that first matchup. So I think this is actually, I'm not going to say Shane's going to cruise to a win, but I think Shane should be a huge favorite.
What do you think about Dennis? I was just going to ask you about Dennis because there's a comment about how Dennis is a little off his game. The only thing I thought Dennis played inspired against Skyler, but of course that's bar table. Where do you think Dennis is right now?
I don't think that he's where he was. I don't know exactly where he's at as far as, but the way that the game that I saw out of Dennis when they played the first time was the best I've ever seen the guy play. And you're talking about already maybe one of the top five players to ever touch a pool cue. That was about the best I've seen him play. Like, he was playing all the time during COVID. I mean, he was literally firing every single day for 6, 7, 8 hours, and he was hitting the balls extremely good. I don't see that now. He was dominating even all like the little regional events that they were having at the time, any tournament he could find. He basically won everything for like a 4-month stretch. We haven't seen him win a tournament now, except for this one.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Yeah. Since when was the last time we saw Dennis up at the top of maybe a couple months, maybe a month, maybe a month and a half? I think it was the Florida tournament where he swept the tournament, I think was the last time we saw him win. And I'm not saying that Dennis isn't a great player anymore. I mean, that's stupid. But I just don't think he's quite at the level he was the first time that they played.
Well, I think it's going to be a fun match. Fun match to watch, for sure. Fun match to watch.
So, Mike, Rob, listen to us having that little debate there. Would anything come to mind for you guys?
Well, the first thing I thought of was if Dennis had slipped at all and whatever, you know, the mental shot of adrenaline that he got by beating Shane twice at big time just, you know, had to help him. And you wonder what kind of little gremlins it puts in Shane's head. That's the only thing that I would add to the equation at this point.
Maybe the last little shot before you get into the match, messing with the head a little bit.
Yeah, it could be.
It might be the part where Bruce Lee gets hit and starts, you know, bleeding, and it might just make Shane mad. You never know.
Yeah.
After listening to you and Demetrius go at it here, I'm convinced that Demetrius could have been the best used car salesman in the United States. Because he could talk me in, you know, a dog I don't want.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, I thought that wasn't going to be a compliment in the beginning, but I think it is now.
Well, if you take and break, I mean, if you were to break pool matches down into their smallest particles and their smallest pieces, like busting the atom, you know, I think Demetrius was the person to talk to, put it all out and put it together again. It just makes so much sense when it comes to pool and the players that play the game. And so do you, Nate. I'm not taking anything away. It's just it's kind of an unfair fight, I think, when you two.
I'll be a rebound compliment. That's fine.
Jeez, he's making all kinds of friends.
how do I mute Rob on this?
Yeah, I'm not on here to be your friend.
That's fair.
Mike Ourton, you have any thoughts on it?
No, I still feel the same way that I did. I had mentioned that I wanted to circle back around to Dennis. You know, it really occurred to me the last couple of weeks how long he's been a dominant part of the game. Yeah. And again, I kind of target this to Mike Pinoza. I think he would be the person to answer this the best. Is Dennis the modern day Efren? And is Dennis and Shane's rivalry the modern day Efren and Earl rivalry?
You're muted again.
I would say no and no.
Really?
I don't think that Dennis is even in a conversation with Efren as far as, you know, historic significance and level of play and impact on the game. Dennis is, you know, amazingly strong mental player and a great shooter and, you know, is all heart, no doubt about it. But he doesn't have, to me, nearly the track record that Efren had. As far as their head-to-head, you know, head-to-head, I don't remember that many tournaments where Shane and Dennis played in the final. And to me, that's what rivalries are. That's, you know, that's Earl and Efren and, you know, Siegel and Varner. And, you know, you're talking about different matchups there. So I would say, you know, at that level, not the same. Not to take anything away from Dennis. He's, you know, arguably a Hall of Fame player and is certainly one of the best money players and one of the biggest hearts, you know, in the game in the last 25 years. But I don't think they're at the same level, to be honest.
Okay.
Would you put Shane at the level of Earl?
Close. I don't think Shane would put himself at the level of Earl. Earl in his prime was a sight to behold. I mean, there was nothing like it. You know, nobody shot like Earl. Shane has never shot straighter than Earl. So that was at a time in the game where breaking was slamming them as hard as you can and not knowing where any balls were going and still firing everything in from there. It was a more offensive game then. And I just think, yeah, Earl was, you know, just to me, a notch above. But Shane, you know, over the last 20 years in the 2000s, certainly the most dominant player in the U.S. and one of the most, you know, one of the top three or four dominant players in the world for sure.
Well, I'll just throw in, I don't think that Shane was greater than Earl because you can't take away from Earl and you can't compare across generations necessarily. Right. But I think what Shane did from 07 until 2017, I think that he dominated more completely against a even more higher level of deeper level of skill and higher level of skill. I think what he did with 10 ball was nobody could touch him, which, you know, and he played 10 ball the way Earl played 9 ball. The games have changed, so you can't really hold the fact that the rack has changed against him. But I would say that Shane, I wouldn't say he surpassed Earl or anything like that. I just think that he proved himself to be a generational talent, and I think he dominated World Pool for about 10 years and raised the bar. And I think he's achieved that level. So anyway, my opinion.
Yeah, no, I will agree with you. You know, generational talent for sure in his generation. What I would argue with you or contest with you is the quality of the fields. When Earl was in his heyday, it was a pretty standard tour in the U.S. You know, they played a lot of tournaments, 64, and it was all the same players. They had a pretty well put together association. And it was Siegel, and it was Varner, and it was Buddy Hall, and it was Jim Rempe, and it was Kim Davenport, and it was Rodney Morris, and you know, Ralph was over here, and Thurston, and Johnny. And so, you know, when you talk about the years where Earl was dominant, there were no slouch matches in any of those tournaments in those days.
But the problem is, though, if you go down to a 64 to 128 player field, you know, you go down 40 spots or 60 spots or 80 spots, and the play started dropping off to being, you know, strong regional players and shortstops. Now you go down 80 spots and you've got guys like Oliver and, you know, Miesko, Vertunsky. And I just think that when you look at the U.S. Open fields with 128 and 256 players that Shane's won, you have to go down real, real far down there before you find guys that aren't turning in real, real, real high level stats. And so I agree that, like, when you look at the top 10 in any field has always been, you know, Hall of Fame worthy. But it's, I think that, you know, the top players of yesteryear, it seems like they could get down to the final 16 and then battle it out against other top players. Whereas now it just feels like from round one, everybody in that field is just completely a killer. It's hard to even make the quarter. That we saw that in the World Championship, how many top players didn't even make the quarterfinals.
Yeah, well,
it was fun to talk about. Thank you.
As the regional old guy here, so I was born last week. I don't even know who Buddy Hall is. Can you explain? Totally just kidding. So I guess let's go through and let's actually give some predictions on the match. So Mike, you're the big screen right now, so why don't you start us? What's your prediction on the score?
I will go Shane. And I'll go 107.
120, 107. Rob, what you got?
I got Shane Hill taking a final hill.
Shocked. I'm shocked.
Mike, what you got?
I'll say Dennis by 7.
120, 113. Demetrius?
Can I bet that the table just explodes between the two of them? No, I don't know. I don't know on this one. I'm really lost at sea. There's so many factors, but I really like Mike's prediction. I'll piggyback 120 to I'll go 111, Dennis. I have no idea what's going to happen though. So I've been wrong on my last two picks. By the way, I wasn't on those podcasts, so I just want to confess I was wrong. Sky beat Dennis on the bar table. Dennis beat Shane on the big table. I've been wrong on those last two, so I'm like, at this point, I'm reeling. But since I got a pick, I'll pick Dennis 120 to 111, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope Shane plays great.
Well, you can always predict that the quarter lands on its side. That's statistically a chance.
That's right. I want to see it go hill again, and I want to see somebody get three fouled. That would be epic.
Oh my God! Like, I think the table would blow up if that happened, because I'm pretty sure whoever got three fouled on the hill would probably just flip it and start it on fire.
And I want to see him play a lockup airtight safety on two fouls, and then see like the other person like study it for like 4 minutes, make like a bridge over a ball, four rail kick, make good contact, and then billiard into the side pocket. Is that horrible to report? Okay, sorry. You can mute me now.
All right.
Okay, Nate, what are you?
120 to 6. No, I'm just kidding. I think Shane wins pretty comfortably. I think it's going to be about 120 to maybe 120, 98. 120, 100, somewhere in that range. I have to pick a number, so I guess we'll go 99 right in the middle. I think Shane gets there. I think Shane's playing the best version of his game, or the best version of what his game can be right now. And I think Dennis is a notch below where he was. Not a lot, not a big lot notch maybe, but enough of a notch that it's going to make the difference. So that's my prediction. That's everybody's prediction. Let's hear you guys out there in the comments while we wrap up the podcast here. What are your predictions for the match? Let's see what you guys all think it's going to be out there. And I guess, is there anything in the match quickly that you guys are looking for as far as trend lines? And I'll start this to kind of give you an idea of what I'm asking for here. I think Dennis double dipping Shane kind of gives him that confidence going into the weekend. I'm kind of looking to see if Dennis carries that over and jumps out to a big lead in the beginning and kind of carries that confidence into this match. So that's really what I'm going to be looking for in the beginning of this match, just to kind of see what double dipping Shane does to the beginning of this match, whether it gives Dennis that big jump of confidence to jump out there earlier, or if Shane comes out firing knowing that he just got double dipped and it's time to make a statement on this match. Mike, anything? Mike Pinoza?
I always, you know, it's like watching a hockey game. I always look at, you know, the first 5 minutes of the period and the last 5 minutes of the period. And so in a pool match that goes over multiple days like this, I try to pay attention to who starts out hot and who closes with a flourish. You know, I'll just be interested to see whether that carries over from day to day, regardless of, you know, who has that flourish.
Gotcha. Rob?
I'm looking forward to seeing what kind of play there is nine ball being racked on the spot. I saw some differences the last time they did this in a tournament where a lot of the racks were a little bit messy. There wasn't as many break and runs. Even though they're trying to control that the one ball and stuff, it didn't seem like anybody got into a pure rhythm on the break. It seemed like the players were fishing around a little bit. And the longer this race is, the more time, of course, they have to do that. And so that's what I'm going to be looking at. And I think that's going to make a difference. I think the break here and what happens right at the first shot after the break is going to be pretty interesting.
All right, Demetrius?
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think that the big two things I'm going to be watching for is, first of all, how that break is working. You know, is Dennis able to keep up with Shane on the break? And how big of a role is the break playing? Are either of them able to generate a ball going in and getting shots and putting big packages together? Or are they both struggling with it? Or does one player have an edge? I think those are the questions. The other thing is I'm going to be looking for how Shane handles it when Dennis has the momentum and when Shane is on his back. I think matches like this, the momentum comes and goes. I think there's no question Shane, when he's got the momentum, is going to be playing, you know, top level pool. I think what I'm really looking for is when Dennis is fighting back and when things aren't going Shane's way, does he leak back a few games, or does he leak off a bunch of games? And is he, you know, is he ready to grit it and fight it to turn things around when he's, you know, in the dirt? Or is he just kind of waiting for it to turn around and irritable and waiting for things to go his way? So I think it's going to come down to how big of a role is the break playing? Who's breaking better? How's that, you know, is there a breaking edge? And then how well is Shane doing when things aren't going his way?
Gotcha. And Mike?
Yeah, I think I'm with Demetrius. I'm interested in seeing how the ebbs and flows go and, you know, the packages that they put together and how they transition back and forth. That was something that really jumped out at me and Dennis and Sky, and I realized that we're not going to see packages like that. But that's kind of what I'm going to be watching for.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I guess, Ben said I'm excited to see the Omega production. Yeah, we can give a shout-out to Mike Ong, who's, I guess, done quite a bit for getting these big matchups together for us fans at home. So big shout out to him with Omega Billiards for putting all these things together. And I guess with that, that's everything on my resume as far as wanting to get everything out for today. So anybody else have anything that they want to discuss before we get moving?
All good.
You know, it's been a while since I've been on here, so I just want to plug my boot camps for any new listeners that don't know. I'm here in Minnesota, but I've got I'm running 3-day pool boot camps for serious pool players. So check out my website at MN, like Minnesota, poolbootcamp.com. Can you link that, Nate? Is there a way you can link the website? I don't know. Anyway, yeah. I'd love for some people to look me up. If you've been playing for a while and you play well and you're trying to figure out how to break through to the next level, give me a call. Let's talk about it. I might be able to help you over the phone, and there's a chance that we could even get together and put in a 3-day training session.
All right. Well, with that, let's close out for another week.
Awesome.
Thanks, everybody, for joining me. Mike Howerton, Mike Pinozzo, Demetrius, Rob. Thanks, guys.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. And Rob, if you need a new car, man, let me know. I've got a 1987. It looks like new. Looks like new.
only driven to church and back.
That's right. All right, boys. I'll see you next time.
All right. Take care, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.
See you, sports fans.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup.
Becoming a patron of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.